You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Now, those of you who are joining us for the very first time, a special welcome to you. I am delighted you're here, and we have new listeners each and every day. You need to know you're in a big family. We've got folks listening in 95 countries, and we are delighted that you have joined us. You need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter, and you can go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and subscribe. It's very simple to do so. It's called the K-Files e-zine, and you will see it in red letters when you open that page, all right? Just click on it and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. No strings attached. Absolutely free. Now, couple of things that I think you need to know about. You know Robbie Thomas. Those of you who have been listening to this show for any length of time are familiar with Robbie. He's been on this show. He's one of the handful of psychics that I think really, really have it. There are a lot of people that think they have it. There are people who know they don't have it but play like they have it. And then there are a handful who really do. And Robbie is one of those. Many of you have the movie called Dead Whisper, and of course Robbie features large in that movie. His show is carried by our parent network, Steel Eye Media Network, and every Sunday. Well, I got an email from Robbie today telling us that this Sunday is going to be his final radio show. And so you want to be sure that you tune in and call in to tell Robbie how much you appreciate him and everything that he has done for so many, many people and perhaps even for you. So that comes on this Sunday. It'll be his last radio appearance or radio show, not his last radio appearance. Over in Europe, there is something new going online. It's called the Low Frequency Array, or LOFAR. And it is a network of up to 25,000 small antennae being built in the Netherlands, Germany, Sweden, France, and the United Kingdom. It will be doing essentially what SETI does, but at a whole different frequency spectrum. SETI, of course, is searching for radio signals from extraterrestrials. This will be doing the same, but in a different spectrum of frequency. And it's not as powerful. It's not looking as far out into space as SETI does. And I got a couple of emails. Got one email that alerted me to this article and gave me a link to it. And a couple of other emails from people who have already read the article, and they wanted to know, well, what do you think about this? You think this is a good thing? Well, I think it's a good thing, generally speaking. However, you've heard me say, if these extraterrestrials are in existence and if they are, in fact, like a million years more advanced than us, I doubt they're still using radio. If you're flying faster than the speed of light, you would outrun your radio signal. We'll be back with Steve Mitchell right after this. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel AllStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website, or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Galaxy.
My guest this evening is here to talk with us about something that there's no doubt about it. It is of high interest around the world. We all love all of the movies that have come out, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy and the Harry Potter movies with the strange creatures and dragons. And I mean, it's just something we're all very sort of mystified by. And we sort of think that, you know, it's all myth and legend and lore. And sort of we think there may be a kernel of truth in there somewhere. Well, Steve is all about that. Steve Mitchell joins us from England, where it's very early in the morning. Steve, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Hi.
I'm just curious, what time is it where you are?
It's just gone 3 o'clock, so I guess it's getting a little bit later in the morning now.
3 o'clock in the morning. Man, I appreciate you being up at this hour to talk with our audience. And I know our audience appreciates it as well. Steve, let's first establish the fact that you've got a new movie out, right?
Yeah, Dragons and Rings. It's out on DVD at the moment. Available through our website, Amazon.com, all kinds of places like that.
And as the title implies, it's about dragons and rings, but give us a little more detail about that. What are we going to see in this movie?
Right. It's slightly misleading. I've been on a few talk shows so far, and quite a lot of people have driven on about the dragon concept. The dragon concept really comes from looking at earth lines, ley lines, earth energy lines, which in ancient lore were called dragons or dragon lines. Combining that with rings, i.e. circles of stone, and looking at it from a scientific perspective, I've kind of always been intrigued by both ends of the spectrum, by the scientific spectrum as well as the mythological spectrum. And I kind of wanted to know where they met and if they did meet. And I spent a lot of time at school kind of thinking, well, the conventional physics that I was taught didn't explain it, didn't match it. And it was only when I kind of went into higher education and looked at music and frequency and then quantum physics that I came to realize that actually the two sit together really, really, really well.
So the kernel of truth in the dragon lore is scientifically based.
I believe so. I absolutely believe there's scientific lore and knowledge. I also believe that if you go back all those sort of thousands, tens of thousands of years, the people who were creating these spaces were creating them for a very specific reason, and that they had intimate knowledge of that law, and that law has been carried on in the form of things like sacred geometry and sacred space and resonant frequency and all kinds of things like that. If you go way back into ancient Egyptian, ancient Greek, ancient Indian law, they all talk in very much a modern kind of semblance, really. They talk in very much a quantum kind of way about the way the universe was formed and about the energy of the universe and the underlying structure of the universe that exactly sit on top of quantum theory, on top of modern physics, string theory, relativity, all that kind of stuff.
You know, pardon me, you know, we've had several shows with different guests talking about ley lines. And this is something that for a lot of people, the first time we did that show, a lot of people had never heard of ley lines before. They didn't know what it was. And you know, now people are beginning to sort of talk about it. It's in their vocabulary now. And while I understand that the lines exist, and in fact, I've been told, and I've seen it on a documentary as well, that there is a ley line, at least one, that passes right through Stonehenge. But the question here is, while I understand that they exist, why are they important?
To me, They are important because they form the structure, or they're part of the structure, the energetic structure of the Earth and reality as we see it. And therefore they form the underlying structure for all that is not only real, but that all that is kind of seen as outside of that reality belt. Everything that we see as esoteric, everything that we see as paranormal, everything that we see as spiritual, all comes down to the same, if you like, energetic structure. At a kind of universal level, that energy structure can be seen much as a kind of matrix of energy that permeates the entire universe, the entire creation at all levels. And that kind of matrix of energy is what I certainly perceive as the source of, like I say, spiritual stuff, esoteric stuff, and maybe our connection to what we might perceive as God, Goddess, Creator, or whatever. So, you know, if we're looking for something outside of our lives, outside of the norm, outside of the day-to-day, if we're looking for that something special, then, you know, to me, it's not just that kind of faith thing, that belief thing, but to me it's there, it's physically there, it's physically provable in a scientific sense that you can then say, well, here we go, here's the phone number.
All right, so then if I understand you, what you're saying is that ley lines, these energy lines that are all over the Earth, perhaps are the cause of a lot of the paranormal things that we experience.
I believe they link in. I believe they're part of the same energy system. It's certainly true that a lot of research has shown that everything from UFO anomalies to ghost anomalies to all kind of psychic phenomena anomalies certainly occur at greater intervals along these ley lines. But I think it's kind of getting back to what the ley line structure is and what it's part of. Like I say, if you perceive the universe or even the planet Earth, it's easier to see it in that perspective as a matrix of energy in a kind of joined together way. And that matrix in itself is absolutely tiny, very, 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 very small. So, you know, really thin lines of very, very small amount of energy all connecting up together. And the ley line aspect of that is the kind of the veins, if you like, the arteries of the vein system in the body. So it's the sort of major pathways of that energy. And of course, you know, being major pathways of energy, you're going to find a lot more anomalies, a lot more happenings on those particular spaces and in those particular places, which is why man recognized them in the first place. Or maybe he didn't. Maybe he created them. I'll come on to that, though.
All right. Now, let me ask a question that I've never asked any guest when we've discussed ley lines, because it never occurred to me. But as you were speaking, it did occur to me. These ley lines were, if you will, installed in Earth billions of years ago. So there they are. Do they ever change? And secondly, when we construct things on a ley line, does it change the course of that ley line?
Yeah, my way of thinking at the moment, and bear in mind, none of us have the answer. If we have the answer, we'd stop and we'd say, that's it, time's up. Maybe everything would stop and we kind of suddenly find, you know, we've finished the game and the big bells are going and the pearly gates are opening or whatever it is. To my experience, like I say, things change. You kind of look at things in different angles. And my perception at the moment is that the ley lines are more a result of placement in a very structured way, in a very constructed way, of such things as stones, stone circles, pyramids, if you like, mounds, various particular places that create these major lines of energy, rather than them necessarily being found and then the stones being placed on them. And I think that was done on purpose. Therefore, in that respect, absolutely yes, those lines of energy, if you like, change. They change in many different ways. They're not necessarily lines. They can be curvy. They can be all kinds of shapes as well. They can change direction. They seem to fluctuate with cycles of the sun, cycles of the moon, cycles of planets even, certainly seasonal cycles. They also fluctuate in charge in terms of the amount of energy that's going along them, as well as the effect of that energy. Some people can find that energy very, very positive. Some people can find that energy very, very negative, much in the same way that electricity can be both positive and negative, depending on how that energy is used and tapped into. Definitely I see them as something that's interchanging, something that kind of moves, and something that can be tapped into and changed, and therefore affected.
All right. Now, based on what you just said, then the ley lines were not inherent in the Earth, but were caused by people building certain things like pyramids and stone circles and things like that that cause the ley lines. Is that correct?
Yeah, like I say, I'm slightly on the fence about this, because every time I look at it, you kind of look at stuff with new ideas and new thoughts and think, well, why does something happen? How does something happen? If you look at something from a scientific perspective, does something build naturally, or do we create it? Do we manifest it? Do we make it happen by actually interacting with it? I certainly think that definitely by placing stones and stone circles, and in fact any building, city, town, in a particular place will alter its energetic structure and will therefore create ley lines. I'm not 100% sure. I want to say they weren't there before that point, but I can certainly see a good reason for them being there afterwards, and why they might necessarily have been created as part of a structure, as part of a plan, if you like, around them. So that's my kind of thought at the moment.
Now, that would imply that those builders had an extremely high level of knowledge.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Ancient people, and did they have an extremely high level of knowledge? And if so, where did they get it, and how did they lose it?
Right. It all comes down to a particular point in time, a particular point in time when mankind changed from being nomadic to a settler. And at that point in being a settler, he suddenly needed to know far more about his environment, far more about the reality in which he existed, and needed to understand the solar system, needed to understand the Earth in relation to that system far greater. I think if you examine the evidence of things like stone circles, when you look at the geometry within them, the sacred geometry, their alignment within them, the energy structure within them, to me it suggests more knowledge than a random occurrence, and that they were therefore designed for a specific reason, i.e. the effect that they have on people. And the effect that they have on reality and the landscape. To me, that suggests that there must have been a group of people who either found that knowledge out simply by trial and error and then passed it on by word of mouth, or maybe they were given it. I haven't really explored that angle, because there's no kind of, I guess, on a scientific level, kind of evidence on that kind of level. Certainly, you know, there's a lot of law within things like ufology law and all that sort of stuff to suggest that maybe the knowledge came from outside. I don't think I'd step into that path, because it's something, like I say.
Well, you know, it boggles the mind when you just stop and think about, like, the Great Pyramid. When you just think that if the official story were true, then there would have to be one of those massive stones put in place every 60 seconds for 30 years. 24 hours a day. Now, the official story, of course, is that it was built in a 30-year span. And you would have to set the stone every 60 seconds for 30 years to get that pyramid built in 30 years. Even with modern equipment, there's no possibility of setting a stone in place every 60 seconds.
It certainly suggests some anomaly somewhere, doesn't it? It certainly suggests that the facts that we have on that count in terms of time scale are either absolutely true and something absolutely phenomenal was going on, or that the time scale was not reported properly, or that the archaeology is not suggestive. I think there's been a lot of certainly programs quite recently, a lot of attempts to prove that you can build a pyramid with people, with ramps, with sand ramps, with all kinds of things. And like you suggest, it would certainly seem to take a lot longer than 30 years to build that kind of structure. I certainly haven't kind of looked into that angle in terms of the exactitude of that. I'm kind of interested in the way the structure works, if you like, in a geometric sense, and in terms of the frequencies, the inherent resonant frequencies within those structures and within structures of stone circles.
Well, let's talk about that for just a moment, since I brought that up as an example, the pyramid. We've got about 3 minutes here till break, so what about the frequencies? What's going on with the pyramid?
Well, what it would seem, and this is not just true of pyramids, this is true of so many spaces, so many sacred spaces. You can apply it into burial mounds, into cairns, into stone circles, into cathedrals, into all these spaces. What has been found recently in the last few years is that all of these spaces have a resonant frequency, and that resonant frequency is quite similar across the board, if not exactly the same. And the resonant frequency within those spaces allows or creates a situation in which anyone who is in that particular space can or is put into a sort of space where the left and right hemispheres of their brain effectively balance out and they go into a trance-like state.
Do you think that may be what was going on with the oracle at Delphi?
Absolutely. I think so. I think if you're looking, I mean, one of the kind of connections that's been made is that the Earth has a resonant frequency, the universe as we know it has a resonant frequency, and these resonant frequencies are found within pyramids, within the sarcophagi, within, like I say, burial mounds, all kinds of places. But you could extend that kind of thought to say that essentially what these places are doing, or at least one of the things that they're doing, is allowing you to connect to the, if you like, the whole of the universe on a creative, on an intuitional, on a psychic, on a spiritual level, and therefore at some point or another share with that mass conscious.
Have you personally been to Stonehenge?
I have, yeah.
All right.
Didn't like it.
You what?
I didn't like it. I wasn't terribly impressed. That sounds really banal, doesn't it?
Well, no. You said that, different people react in different ways to those things.
Yeah. I've been to a lot of stone circles all over, certainly all over England. I think Stonehenge is probably far more important than I'm putting it down to. From my perspective, I found it more overrated, and this is purely personal. I actually kind of enjoy, there's a stone circle not too far away called Avebury, and that's absolutely massive. It kind of has a village in the middle of it. It's got various stone circles, avenues, all kinds of mounds and related geographical kind of interest sort of stuff.
All right, we have to take a break, and I want to talk about Avebury when we come back, and I want to talk about Stonehenge as well. All right, folks, we'll be back with Steve Mitchell from England right after this.
about my disappointments. I think about my choices in life. I think about all my chances that I've had up till now. And I think about my choices made, and I think about the games I played, and how my world is crashing down. There seems to be no end in sight, so I scream out with all my might, Lord, can you hear me now? Dragging me down. I think about all my excuses. They just keep spinning around and around. Oh, but today is a new day. I prayed for help and it's on the way. Lord, I know you're gonna bring me back around. You'll pick me up and you'll dust me off. Clean up my heart, save me from the fall. Tell me I must move forward now.
Welcome back. We are talking with Steve Mitchell, and Steve is speaking to us from his home in England. It is very early in the morning there, and we certainly appreciate him for being up so early and talking with us. And let me say, Steve, we have folks up as early every day who listen. You know, we have some students in Morocco that get up and meet in a college dorm and listen to the show every day.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's dedication. That's really nice.
It is. First, before we go to Avery, and I believe you said Avery, right?
Avery, yes.
How do you spell it?
A-V-E-B-U-R-Y.
Avery. All right. Before we go there, and before we go back to Stonehenge, I want to go back to something you said earlier. You said these ley lines in ancient lore are referred to as the dragon's lines.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that. Yeah. Why?
I suspect, well, it comes down to a number of reasons, really. You can certainly find it in Chinese mythology. It's far more prevalent. In English mythology, we have it kind of disguised in this sort of old dragon lore of George and the Dragon and so forth. The dragon lines, essentially, because they are, in one case, they're power lines. They're lines of energy, very much sort of fiery, very much in that kind of dragon sense. In a certain sense, they're dragonic because they're sinuous, because they weave waves. because they kind of resemble a dragon if you were to actually see that energy in reality in its wave form. And also in sense of that kind of flying as well, in terms of that space that they take you to, that sort of magical space that they take you to, they impact on your imagination. They bring forth all kinds of images as part of the effect, the natural effect of the energy upon the psyche, upon the brain and the way the brain functions. And one of the things that we do, Jung kind of ideal is this in the sense of archetypes, is that we tend to pull up images from deep within our ancestral memories. Those images may be constructs, they may be something we've created, or they may actually be real images, or they may be a kind of combination of the two, to represent things that we're unfamiliar with, to represent things that we cannot, if you like, place an immediate image over. We can't kind of recognize. So we draw upon these image forms and place them over the top. So this is where I believe this whole sort of dragon laws come from, that you've got this kind of creature, this energy, it's fiery, it flies, it's sinuous, and from there you can kind of construct the creature itself that represents the energy of that line, and that is closest to the dragon. Maybe it ties back into, way back into racial memory, way back into prehistoric times, and way back into... it's been suggested that it certainly ties back into the kind of creatures that once roamed the earth, but that would imply a lot of genetic memory going on, which is quite interesting in itself.
All right, now at Avebury, is there a ley line?
There are plenty of ley lines, spreading all across the country. What seems to happen is that these lines of energy join up various places. The big exponent, I guess, or the most recent exponent, was a guy called... how can I forget the name? That's really bad.
That's okay.
Give me 2 seconds. Alfred Watkins. Alfred Watkins, back in the 20s, was a surveyor, amongst other things, and he used to kind of roam around the land, and he had this kind of inkling, this idea, this vision, that places seem to connect in a straight line. Now, from his perspective, he was looking in terms of trade routes, in terms of the directions that man would take in order to travel from A to B, being the straightest point on which sort of things like the Roman roadways were built, and which you therefore generate structures, you generate cities, you generate villages, you generate your sort of places of worship and so forth. So he originally kind of noticed this and coined the phrase ley line, and it wasn't really until Dionne Fortune, about 10 years later, when she was writing a novel, that she kind of suggested this concept of energy being related to it. And I guess it probably took another few decades, certainly, you know, a lot of, if you like, New Age type people grabbed hold of this idea and ran, and it wasn't until the 70s, until a project, suddenly enough, called the Dragon Project, that people actually started to investigate this on a scientific level and look at the forms of energy that were around these spaces, around these places, and look and see whether these energy lines connected, and using things like photography, using things like electromagnetic detection, Geiger counters, and even psychics and dowsers to test the validity of these lines and these spaces. And they kind of came to the conclusion that there wasn't anything sort of special in terms of anything extra, any sort of new undiscovered earth energy that no one had found, but they certainly noticed that the natural energies that we're aware of in terms of the electric energies, the magnetic energies, the geodetic energies, all these sort of energies, certainly show anomalies in stone circles, on ley lines, and in all these kind of specific places.
All right, now, you said that at Avebury you really liked that place, but you didn't like Stonehenge, and you said that The stone circle at Avebury is massive. So let me ask two questions. The first one, why do you like Avebury and not Stonehenge? And the second question, why did they build stone circles?
Okay. First question. I just get drawn to Avebury. A lot has been made out of Stonehenge. It's kind of the big mysterious place of Britain, if you like. And I guess when I went there and visited, and a few times that I've been, I've never found it matches up to expectations somehow. And yet Avebury, when I go to Avebury, it's so massive, it's so awe-inspiring that for me, you know, if you want to find magic in a place, if you want to find something special, it just does it for me. It does it for more. And the surrounding countryside as well. There's so much going on in there. Not far away, about a mile or so, is a huge mound called Silbury. We were talking about pyramids early on. And Silbury is effectively the kind of British, if not European, pyramid in terms of its size. It's a huge mound of earth. And then you have various avenues of stones, quite a few burial mounds and cairns around, all of which seem to link in some way into the landscape and become part of the landscape as well as part of each other in structure. Why were they built? Is that a question?
It is indeed.
To me, it comes down to, like I say, looking back into history. We have a period of history where, as I said, we are nomadic. For us as nomadic people, what matters the most is the sun. And the sun is most important because we follow it. The sun is there, if you like, it guides our way, because as the seasons change, the beasts, the animals, which are effectively our staple diet, they move with the sun. They go to where it's hottest. And we move. We follow that. We go along those paths. And year in and year out, we walk and we tread. We find places where we can eat. We find sort of rich places and so forth. And at some point along the way, we seem to have settled down and decided to habitate, to live in a place. And all of a sudden, no longer is it perpetually sunny, no longer are we simply following the sun, if you like, the Eden, if you like. We're stuck in one place and we're suddenly subjected to seasons. And once we're subjected to winter and summer, and once we're subjected to those extremities, life changes. Life changes hugely. Our fears, our hopes change. Our belief system changes. And more importantly, our location and our place in that location become important. The place and the location compared to other places that we may well want to travel to and from become important. And the timing in that location becomes important. We need to know when summer's coming. We need to know when winter's coming. We need to know not only when spring is coming, but particular times in spring. We need to know what the moon is doing, because we need to know when to plant the seeds, when they're going to grow the best, because obviously the moon governs the tide, it governs water, and therefore that governs the growth of plants. We also need to know what the moon is doing in terms of the female cycle, because the moon governs the female cycle. It governs when the best time is to procreate. It governs when the best time is to reproduce and make children. So all of a sudden, location and time become really important. So we start to, if you like, set our landscape out in such a way that we're seeking to represent it in one respect, and we're also seeking to control it. We're seeking a way to kind of, if you like, establish a reality that we're comfortable with, a reality that takes on board this continual sinuous wave of spring, summer, winter, and all the cycles around that. It also has to take into account other cycles, because we have cycles that are governed by the planets. We kind of don't tend to notice this very much nowadays. Most people are in some sense sensitive and recognize a sensitivity to the moon, obviously from a feminine principle that governs the feminine tide, but from everyone's perspective it governs our mood, it governs the way we think, it governs the way we act.
Alright, we are into a break. We'll be back, more with Steve Mitchell, Dragons and Rings.
this morning, had a strong desire to get this out. Never had the struggle to understand just what life's about. When I hold my six string, I close my eyes and I absorb. Just have to figure out the secrets of the magic door. I tell, so I huff and I puff and I scream, so I smile and I grin and I just want to find someone to let me in.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com. We're talking with Steve Mitchell, and we're talking about Dragons and Rings, and the science behind Dragons and Rings. When we went away, we were talking about why did they build circles? Why not rectangles?
It's a good point, really. The circle, first of all, the circles that you kind of find are not perfect circles because of the way they include geometry, the way they work on frequency levels and so forth. The circle is a universal symbol. The perfect circle represents, on a sacred sort of level, it represents perfection, literally. It represents perfect man, it represents the perfect universe, it represents God in perfection. In the Greek symbology, it represents what they called the monad, and in fact it was the dotted circle, which has become a sort of amazing sort of glyph that kind of permeates all kinds of secret societies and so forth. And in the Greek mythology, the monad was the original energy of the universe, the original, if you like, what you might call God, that kind of underlying chaos, but that also underlying kind of quantum chaos that we associate with that level. So the circle becomes extraordinarily important, far more important than any other shape, effectively. All the other shapes come out of the circle, so if you've got a circle described on the ground, then within that circle you can find a square, you can find a triangle, you can find a hexagon, you can find a pentagram, you can find all those shapes because they're all a result of the circle, but the circle is the most important because it is literally the beginning, the end. It represents us. It represents us in relationship to the universe and us in relationship to ourselves and our own psychology and our own psyche.
All right, now how does all of this relate to crop circles? Because I read in your material that there is some sort of a link.
Yeah, there's been a lot of research done. I mean, bear in mind what I do is, you know, a lot of kind of stuff I come up with, I think of, and then I find there's a lot of other people thinking along the same direction. There's been lots and lots of research done recently on crop circles and how they formulate and where they come from. And certainly the suggestion that appeals to me and ties in with my way of thinking and looking at things and the way I've kind of put everything together, if you like, to answer it from my perspective, is that stone circles and, if you like, ley lines, for want of a better word, energy lines, they're all focuses of energy. They're focuses of energy that build up. And stone circle is a really good example of this. If you imagine a circle, literally, of energy, and that energy goes round and round and creates a current, and within the current you end up with various other forms of energy, some of which are literally going up and down, a bit like magnetism responds to an electronic current. And all that's building up. And maybe we don't use the circles for what they were intended. Maybe at some point there's a natural way of using that energy. Certainly what I believe is happening now, regardless of that, is that the energy builds up and has to dissipate. And so it finds, if you like, a specific line, a specific place to dissipate. So it'll pop out at the edge of a stone circle and go off into the countryside. And what you find is a lot of crop circles are appearing very close to stone circles and ley lines and so forth. That also relates to the consistency of the soil, the consistency of the rock strata underneath, the presence of water, the presence of magnetite, the presence of quartz and so forth. And all of those act as an earthing point for that energy. So the energy Earth, and that energy is literally, it's pure energy in its purest form. It's the energy from which we, if you like, get light. It's the energy from which we get sound. It's the same energy that we get radiation, magnetism, electricity, and so forth. But it's the pure form of that energy. And what has been found is that this energy is responsive on a quantum level. If you look at it as a quantum energy responds to the person who is experiencing or experimenting with that energy and responds in a way that is maybe expected, that becomes part of that experience, part of that experiment. And what's been found is that if you take water, is a really easy example because everyone can do this. If you breathe into a glass of water, i.e. if you put air in, if you put energy into that water, you'll see a ripple-like pattern. Now, if you were to sing into that glass of water, that ripple pattern would change. And if you could store that ripple and have a look at it, then you would see lots of different ripple-type patterns. And this has been done with iron filings, where people have put different frequencies into those iron filings and noticed that not only do you get circular patterns, but you get all kinds of other geometric patterns. And they're the same geometric patterns that have been found in crop circles. And the belief certainly that's going around, which I kind of agree with, is that because we're part of our own system, because we're part of the universal system, then we can effectively be part of and are therefore effectively creating, if you like, as a kind of group mind, the patterns in the crop circles, thus kind of talking to ourselves, or if you like, our higher consciousness or our God consciousness or whatever you want to call it, this kind of energy that is everything and everyone is effectively creating those patterns within the crop circles as literally a form of energetic pattern, a resonant pattern.
All right, so then the linkage would be a linkage between our consciousness and the energetic lines. And somehow our consciousness is activating those lines to resonate a frequency that creates the crop circles.
Yeah, that creates a pattern. What's most interesting is that crop circles have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. Reports can be found in medieval texts, all kinds of texts. They're not something new. They're not something that's kind of popped up in the 70s, 80s, when a couple of guys with planks claimed to have kind of formed them. And certainly the circular pattern has been recognized for a long time. And it's quite interesting that once our attention focused on these circular patterns, they started to develop, they started to generate, they started to change. And as we became more interested in the patterns, so the patterns became more complex. And to me, that implies a conversation, if you like, on a level. Something that I do out of this space, if you like, is I work in music therapy with people with special needs. And music literally does become a language. It becomes the main language between the people who are participating in that session. And you no longer talk, you no longer communicate in the kind of way that we're familiar with, but you communicate with music, and that person communicates back with music. And all music is effectively frequency, and it's exactly the same thing, I believe, that's going on here.
Well, if it is going on that way, if that's what's taking place, then the collective consciousness in various areas of the world could be what's causing earthquakes and massive climate change and volcanic activity, as well as crop circles.
I don't think that's something you should throw out. I think it's something that's worth consideration. And I think, you know, if you look back, it's interesting, isn't it? From again, going back into kind of ancient belief, we believed that we were part of our environment. We respected it. We certainly interacted with it and integrated with it. And we'd used various ways of attempting to either control or influence it. Is it just some kind of strange belief? Did we just think that we were controlling it because we saw a set of random events and we kind of thought we were creating the pattern? Or indeed, are we actually part of that pattern? I think if you look, like I say, from a kind of quantum level and string theory level, then the suggestion is that we're an absolutely integrate part of the patterning, part of the energy pattern of the universe, certainly part of the energy pattern of our planet. And, you know, therefore, a degree of responsibility has to be there in a way. It certainly, you know, must lead people into thinking at least, you know, step out of the door and take some responsibility.
I agree. And we have a break coming. Now, this leads me to an inevitable leap here, one that we're going to discuss when we come back after the break. And that is it possible that there really were wizards who really knew how to tap into this thing and were able to manipulate by their consciousness the powers that were there in those ley lines and thereby cause things to happen, and people then said, that's a wizard? We'll be back with Steve Mitchell and my very weird question right after this.
though you haven't said a word. I've known you long enough to know this is gonna hurt. Don't be shy, get it out. That's what we've always talked about. You don't do us any favors holding it in, even though I know what you're gonna say. You should know by now that we will be okay. Say it, tell me what you're feeling. Don't use the words you think I wanna hear. Till you say just what you're feeling, we're strong enough to work it out. Is it you? Is it me? Is it something that I've done? I'd never mean to hurt you. Am I the one, even though I know what you're gonna say? You should know by now we will be okay. Say it, tell me what you're feeling. Don't use the words you think I wanna hear.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and my guest this evening is Steve Mitchell, joining us from the United Kingdom, and he is talking with us about some really strange stuff. Now, Steve, let me tell you, we already have callers on hold, so we want to get to them pretty quick. But what about that question? You know, there are a lot of legends about wizards and a lot of stories about their powers. Is it possible that these were guys that were tuned in to this ley line energy and could knew that they could affect it with their minds?
In a nutshell, yes. In a nutshell, my understanding, or certainly my way of looking at it, is that circles, ley lines, they are all a means to control. They're all a means to control the reality that we're in and to control people in that reality. The answer I would have to give would probably take me a good hour to get through. One of the things I want to throw in, just while I was kind of thinking of that over the few minutes in the break, the DVD itself, Dragons and Rings, it's an hour-long DVD. If you can imagine, you can't get a lot into an hour. It's kind of a gloss over, really, and I've tried to make it as simple as I can. And when you're kind of getting into quantum stuff as well as other things, it's kind of bewildering to get it into that small amount of time. So what I'm doing at the moment is kind of jotting down all the extraneous ideas, all the stuff around the outside. Some of it I'm putting it up on the website as I'm going along on dragonsandrings.com. some of it I'm just keeping in notated form, ready to maybe create a book or maybe to create something extra out of it, because there's so much for me that kind of comes out of this process, and certainly the creative power, the ability to control the way we think, the way we behave, the way we rationale, the way we create our reality ties into the very energetic structure of the universe at its root core, and that ties into the way stone circles work. So in, like I say, in a nutshell, absolutely, there's every kind of chance that that was there.
All right, let's go to the telephone line, caller. You are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello. It's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Kevin, and hello, Steve. Hello,
hi,
Steve. Yes, I've actually read up a lot on a lot of the structures around the planet that have resonance frequencies and such, and I know that the universe has some as well. Now, I have a theory of my own, and I'd like to get your opinion on it. Is that, of course, I'm sure that you've heard of that soon that the planets are going to be the planets and the sun is going to be aligning with the center of the galaxy, and of course the magic number everybody's been hearing is 2012, and I have a feeling that this is going to cause and you know this 2012 stuff is supposed to cause a consciousness shift in people, and you've mentioned that the resonance of these structures does affect the consciousness of people, at you know, people that can tune into to such. I want to know, my theory is that once this alignment happens, there's going to be an effect on the resonance frequency with all these structures on the planet and the ley lines, and I think that's what's going to cause the consciousness shift in humans come 2012. What is your theory on that?
It may well do. Bear in mind, the resonance frequency of any space is dictated by the structure of the space. That structure is physically fixed. The reason why there is a resonance frequency in all these places is because of the size, is because of the dimensions, is because of the way it's been built. I don't necessarily believe that will change at any point. What I think you'll find, though, is that the harmonics, the actual inherent frequencies within those frequencies, are subject to change. And this becomes quite interesting. The main frequency quoted, and I don't think I'm talking out of place here, a lot of people have done research, and I think most people who've done the research have published enough now for us to kind of say that there's a particular chord, if you like, structure underlying the whole of these frequencies, which is F sharp. That in itself becomes a kind of carrier wave, if you like. It becomes a device to allow us to enter, or to put us into, depending which way you look at it, a particular state of mind. And that particular state of mind is a very receptive state of mind. That state of mind, like I said earlier on, is where both sides of the brain come into balance, as well as the wave patterns in our mind changing. We go, I think, into beta. I'm never terribly good at quoting things straight off because my mind just fills up with too much information and it leaks out all over the place. But we go into, I think, like I said, beta waves, which make us receptive, which make us liable, if you like, in a kind of trance-like state. That in itself, to me, is a starting point rather than an ending point. It's a starting point where were you to use other frequencies, for example, by toning, by singing particular chants, by singing particular hymns and so forth, you could then elucidate more states, more changes in terms of consciousness. I think where you're coming in terms of the frequencies of the universe, the kind of resonant frequencies, if you like, with the planets aligning and so forth, that would certainly create a frequency change that if we were in that state, it would affect us in an interesting way. Whether that's going to affect everyone, I suspect, rather than a particular point in time, it's something that's a continual change that we're in the process of. It's been happening for quite a long time and will continue to happen for quite a long time.
Let me say to our listeners around the world, if you are in the United States or Canada, we have a toll-free number for you at 1-800-289-1092. If you can't remember that number, it's on the website, all right, kevinsmithshow.com. Use the toll-free number if you have a question or a comment. If you're outside of that area, you can use Skype, and our Skype phone number, if you will, is kevin.smith.show. All right? So you can participate in this discussion by using Skype and by just typing in kevin.smith.show. Or you can send me a flash message if you're outside of our toll-free area. And you just do that by sending an email to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. I'll read it on the air as long as it's outside. It comes from outside of our toll-free area. And we'll ask Steve to comment on it. Now, Steve, you're talking about tones. And yeah. this brings to mind the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Because absolutely.
Yeah, we're all familiar with that tone now, that series of tones.
Yeah.
That's it. Any idea if that starts with F sharp?
Do you know, I haven't even looked at it. it's something you kind of play, it's something you bash out, it's something I could bash out on the piano, but I haven't even kind of gone to the Spielberg soundtrack. It hasn't occurred to me to kind of check to see what keys, what have you like kind of messages he might have surreptitiously put in there. I think the tones are important. I think also the way they're carried is important. Tone becomes a carrier wave for other information. If you see literally a tone as a sine wave, for example, it's an up-down pattern. If that tone stays the same but you change the pattern within it, then you can, if you like, carry a new message within one tone. Does that make sense?
Oh, sure it does. Sure it does.
It's certainly been used today. In fact, there was a system developed... let me get it right, probably 10 years or so back at least, called Silent Sound. I don't know if you've come across that.
Mm-hmm.
But effectively that was a way of carrying intricate messages within subliminal sound in order to modify the way that we think, in order to kind of get people to think differently, to behave differently, even to change people.
Oh, yeah. They've used that, as a matter of fact, in the malls in Tokyo to get people to stop stealing. And it apparently works.
Yeah, they put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that in itself is I think, and I don't know if I'm 100% sure on this, that I think is just using that ultrasound. But if you use the ultrasound as a carrier, then you can put a lot more information into it. The ultrasound, I think, the particular frequency that they use is meant to... certainly the one that I've come across anyway, it's certainly meant to impact on a particular kind of age group, and it sort of makes you, if you like, a little bit jumpy, a little bit kind of, you know, not wanting to do whatever you're wanting to do.
It's a mind-altering or mind-control kind of a signal. It. Let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? You're blocked. I told you, if you do that to me, I'll block you. All right, when you call and I put you on hold, you need to stay on hold until we get to you. All right, 1-800-289-1092 to the rest of you who have patiently been dialing and trying to get in. The person who did that owes you an apology. They blocked you from getting in. 1-800-289-1092, or you can Skype at kevin.smith.show. Kevin.smith.show. You're finding out about the power of these ley lines, and you're finding out about the way that human consciousness seems to be able to manipulate that power.
Mm.
Obviously, as you are finding out about it, you probably are not the first to have found out about it. I would think there would probably be scientists in very high, very dark programs. By dark, I don't mean sinister. I just mean secret. Who
Absolutely.
Know about that.
put it this way. In my research into the kind of crop circle phenomenon, I've come across a certain group, you know, various groups of people that I know that don't like it to be known that they're interested. A lot of that is to do with the fact that, hey, it's more of a hobby of theirs, and their profile is such that it might well alter people's perception. But there are also quite a lot of people out there, like you say, who are researching it because of the implications, because it's actually telling us a huge amount. If you look into the way crop circles are formed on a scientific level, then it tells you a lot about this energy that a lot of other scientists, like I say, are calling, you know, quantum, are kind of relating to string theory and so forth. It's giving us a lot of clues about a lot of things. And I guess what I'm doing is I'm taking bits of those and trying to put the whole picture together. A lot of people get very blinkered, don't they, and kind of find themselves, well, we'll just look at this, and that's my pet theory. And I'm kind of looking at it at a generic level and trying to string together as much as I can into a kind of almost universal theory, I guess. From my perspective, it's what drives me.
All right, let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Gary from New York.
Yes, Gary.
Good morning, Stephen. Steve.
Hi.
My question is, what place in Britain do you find to have the most energy, and why do you think that spot emanates that much energy? I will hang up and listen for your response.
Thanks for the call, Gary.
I think I've kind of covered it. I keep mentioning Avery, don't I? I'm drawn to various places, and the thing I think you need to kind of note is that each place seems to have a pattern. It seems to have a kind of rise and fall. You can go to one place at one time of the year, one time of the day, and it just feels like, I don't know, dead, for want of a better word, if you're going to talk energetically wise in terms of the way that it affects you, in terms of the way it kind of feels on a kind of magical, energetic kind of perspective. At another time, it will have a lot more going on. And I think the thing, like I say, about Avery is there's so much more around that area that ties into it. It's quite a kind of construct in itself, linking into so many other places. There's a lot going on at all the times at various of those places. So I guess that's the one that intrigues me the most. Other people will probably disagree with me and say they prefer roll white stones or they prefer other stone circles, but certainly, you know, and it's not too far away from where I used to live, and so, you know, it's quite accessible. And you also get a lot of the crop circles going on down there, so you can look at a lot of kind of comparatives.
Well, what about his question as to why do you think this has the most energy? For what reason?
Like I say, to me, it's because it's such a complex structure. It's if you see a stone circle as a battery, but a fluctuating battery, so its kind of power is greater or less. If you string a load of them together, you're going to get a load more power going on, basically. Avery itself isn't just one circle. It's got two circles inside it. It's got two avenues that curl off. Each of those are doing various things. You could argue that the size of it may well contribute to it. But like I say, it ties into other structures nearby. Silbury Hill is a great, what you might call... Are you familiar with Orgone and Orgone generators?
Yes.
Yes, right. In that kind of level, if you see it in that kind of energetic level, then Silbury becomes a great big kind of powerhouse for the whole area. So I guess in terms of positioning and in terms of complexity of structures and link structures around it, it makes it quite a, for me, certainly one of the sort of primary nodes on the British Isles.
All right, let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yes, Brent.
Steve, just morbid curiosity. Have you ever done Ben McDewey?
Did you say Feng Shui?
Ben McDewey, the mountain up in Scotland.
Right, no. I haven't been up that far. far north. No, I've only been up to Scotland a couple of times. No. Why?
The story of the big grey man, you might want to look into it and just see what you find.
Right. Do me a favour then. Go on to my site, dragonsandrings.com. Just drop me an email from there and I'll check it out.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call.
Goodbye.
All right, I'm not really sure what the story is with Ben McDooey.
No.
I do know that that's one of our faithful listeners, and I do know that he made a trip over there and went there, but I'm not sure what the story is about that.
I'd be very interested in hearing.
Well, you know, your part of the world, the United Kingdom, has some of the most amazing ancient stories that any of us can imagine. And, I mean, drawing upon that, look, based on some of the ancient myths and legends, Harry Potter became the single most successful series of books in history.
Mm.
And yes, they are well written. Yes, they are. The movies were well produced. All of that plays a part, but you know, just the myths and the legends of your part of the world fascinate the rest of the world. Who is not fascinated by the stories of King Arthur? And did he even really exist? We don't know for sure. But, you know, it's a fascinating story. And Merlin, what a fascinating, for those of us interested in things paranormal, what a fascinating story about Merlin. And really, it was Merlin that I had in mind when I asked the question about wizards. But it applies also to Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings series. These guys, even in those movies, they were not all powerful, but they could bend energy, if you will. They could cause energetic things to happen. And it's just so fascinating. And you know, I don't know what it must be like. Maybe if you live there, it's just everyday stuff, but the rest of us are fascinated with it.
I think you're right there. I think it's like anywhere else, really. From the perspective of England, from the respect of the UK, you know, it's absolute boiling pot of mythology, a lot of which has been imported, a lot of which has kind of sat on top of other mythology. We've been invaded, I guess, so many times over the millennia by various kind of groups of people that have brought their belief structures and belief systems in, that have sat on top of others and are kind of all incorporated into all these wonderful myths and legends. And yeah, it is absolutely magical growing up in it. I think, you know, there are two groups, aren't there? There's the kind of group of people who, if you like, see life as just the day-to-day grind, the day-to-day living. Let's just get on, go out to work, earn our money, go on holiday once a year, and all this sort of stuff. And you're going to find that absolutely anywhere. And then there's that group of people who are absolutely fascinated by the countryside, by the legend around them. And then there's going to be that other group of people who go, oh, well, it's England, we've got it. What about America? You know, what about the Native American culture? What about the Egyptian culture? What about all these other cultures? So I guess it's a kind of way of being, isn't it? It's certainly, you know, it's what got me going, because when I was much younger, I lived right on the edge of the Ridgeway, which was, you know, absolutely littered with all these kind of sacred sites and spaces and magical places, and, you know, full of legend, full of myth and full of lore. And, you know, as a young kid growing up in it, it grabs your imagination, and certainly, you know, I've carried that into adulthood.
Well, you know, if there is a reality to what we were talking about with the wizards, if that's a very real possibility, and it is a possibility, but if that's really what was going on, then I'm persuaded it probably still is going on. There are probably people who can tune in to that energy and manipulate it, and there may be technologies now developed that can do the same thing.
Absolutely. I think it's certainly that technologies seem to fall in line with the sort of, if you like, technology that I'm looking at with respect to ley lines, with respect to circles, with respect to all this energy. But there's always two ways of looking at it. There's the internal psychological construct where we effectively formulate our version of reality in our head, and all of our own versions of reality are substantially or slightly different from each other's, and that we can reform and recreate those realities by changing our perception, changing the way we look at things, and all kinds of stuff. And that is a very powerful tool in itself, and one way to look at a way that we can kind of, if you like, using such things as NLP and so forth, suggest different realities to other people that can be substantially different from the reality that we already experience. And then there's the outside perspective, the kind of perspective of the quantum world, if you like, which looks at the whole energetic basis of everything, and if everything is based on that energy, and if matter is basically energy, then devices exist that can convert energy to matter and matter to energy, and therefore change our reality on that level.
All right, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you'll have to be very quick because we have a break coming up. But your first name and where are you calling from?
Oh, Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yes, Chris.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Mr. Mitchell, I just want to ask you real quick if you thought the placement of the LHC in Switzerland or any of the structure, shape of the components play into any ley lines at all.
You're talking about the new Hadron Collider?
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Right. That one hasn't caught my attention. Just explain it very, very quickly. Either that or we'll grab it after the break. Is it a specific scientific building, or what is it?
Just the large Hadron Collider where they're going to be testing the quantum physics theories. I was just curious if the structure itself or the placement of it, if it ran across any ley lines or if any of that might have been used in its construction.
I don't know. To be absolutely brutally honest with you, I don't know the answer to that one. It's like I said, it's not the building I'm familiar with in terms of having kind of caught my attention. I thought, oh yes, that's interesting. Like I said before, I certainly think that the technology that is being used in quantum level and, if you like, in time dilation level and various other things that's been going around for, you know, decades, way back to Tesla and people like that and even Maxwell, certainly kind of ties into the same technology that I would see working in ley lines and working in stone circles, and certainly scientists who are working on those projects are also interested in this phenomenon because of those same reasons. Beyond that, I can't say a lot.
Chris, let me ask you quickly, do you know how long that Hadron Collider is? It's a big circle.
Yeah, I know it stretched into a couple different countries, and I was just kind of curious if any of those, you know, anybody had heard anything about any of the components or any of the...
Do you know how many miles it is?
I can't recall offhand, no.
Yeah. All right, we're into a break, and we have to step out and let it happen. Chris, thanks for the call. And ladies and gentlemen, we will be back more with Steve Mitchell and your telephone calls or Skype right after this. We'll be right back.
for the fight they pray. Pray for a heavenly place for all of the human race. Too much war in this land. Men dying, they suffering, it's sad. One love of people we must try. Jah tell us, oh tell us why.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and let me remind you of our telephone number. Toll-free throughout the USA and Canada, it is 1-800-289-1092. If you're outside of that area, you can call me on Skype. Now, some of you are still in a fog about that, and you're saying, well, what is Skype? Well, Skype is free software. Go to skype.com, S-K-Y-P-E. Download the software. And follow the directions, and then you'll be able to call me on Skype. It won't cost you anything, all right? You can actually call in and talk to the guest. And our Skype address is kevin.smith.show, and my guest is Steve Mitchell. Steve, this Large Hadron Collider goes, it crosses the border from Switzerland into France, and comes back. So, I mean, it's very long, and it's very likely that at some point it crosses a ley line. It's miles long.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of miles, and Stonehenge, probably Avebury too. You know, you guys have a comedian. I can't think of his last name. His first name is Eddie. He dresses
Eddie Izzard.
I'm sorry?
Eddie Izzard.
That's the guy. Dresses in about half drag. And he does an absolutely hilarious comedic routine on building Stonehenge. And one of his deals is that, you know, the stones were taken from a quarry
miles and miles away, something like, what, 200 miles away? Long ways off. And then he's, you know, his routine is getting the quarrymen to help push these stones on logs all the way over to where Stonehenge is going to be built. What's the theory? How did they get from where they came from to where they are?
There's numerous theories, aren't there? I think there's the sledging theory where they're actually tied onto logs which are cut in such a way that they can run across the country. There's a sledging theory where they use logs and rolling logs. Certainly, you know, they could be floated for part of the way because they come across from Wales down into the bottom half of England. So there's a bit of channel to cross so they can kind of float them round the edge. I think the most impressive thing is the fact that they've gone so far to get that particular stone, which, you know, must at least kind of tell you how important the stone was for those people in terms of either its aesthetic quality. I don't know if you travel that far to get something that's prettier than the local stone, or indeed, therefore, its physical quality and its chemistry and makeup in terms of quartz and in terms of its electromagnetic quality.
Well, it certainly indicates that the people who did this were not near as primitive as a lot of people might like to imagine.
No.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark.
First, I'd like to thank you for having Colonel Ware on last night, Kevin. It was a great show.
Well, you're certainly welcome.
Steve, I wondered if you'd ever heard of an English UFO researcher named David Boyle.
David Boyle. Doesn't ring a bell straight off. Enlighten me.
He is a pretty interesting guy. He believes that the human race was genetically engineered by the Greys. And according to David, the Greys crossed the lion with the ape to get the human race. And if you notice, the Sphinx in Egypt is part lion. I just wondered if you had any comment on those thoughts.
I'm going to disappoint you and say it isn't something that jumps up and down at me and grabs me, to be brutally honest with you. I'm very much aware of a lot of the sort of UFO mythology, and it's kind of interesting. It's from the way I guess I look at stuff, there's two angles that I have on UFOs. The first angle is that they're part of the natural energy system anyway. They're part of the energy that we're part of. Second angle is that if you want to examine the fact that we're in an infinitely wide universe and that it's absolutely possible to cross time and space very, very easily using certain technology, then that would imply that, you know, we could certainly be visited by people. As to genetic engineering and so forth, I'm not too sure. The jury's out for me, I'm afraid, on that one, to be honest with you.
All righty, thanks. That's all I had.
All right, thanks for the call.
That's okay.
You know, my guest last night made a statement.
Yeah.
That really has a lot of gravity, I think.
Yep.
He said, you know, I've been a truth seeker for 56 years, and I've come to the conclusion that the universe is infinitely and always will be infinitely more complex than the human mind can grasp.
Mm.
And, you know, you're talking about quantum physics.
Mm.
In quantum physics, there is quantum entanglement, meaning that I am a part of everything I think about.
Yep.
And that being the case, as we begin to realize this, and actually the father of quantum physics theory of string theory, Dr. Michio mm-hmm. Kaku has been on this show.
Right.
And, you know, we've done a lot of talking about this, and as we think about quantum physics and quantum entanglement and the complexity of the universe, it seems to me that it would only be normal and natural that the more we think about and understand how that works, the more our eyes are open to things that were around us anyway.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm dreaming. But I, you know, it seems that it would have that effect because of the quantum entanglement.
Yeah. The other way of looking at it is, are we actually creating it by thinking of it? I mean, one of the common fallacies, and it's a kind of fallacy in a way, because it's not that it's not true, it's just part of the truth, is that we kind of create the universe on a quantum level and we can manifest absolutely anything that we want because quantum responds to us. And what that doesn't take into account is exactly what you were talking about just then, the whole kind of quantum entanglement stuff, all the spin theory that goes along with it. But necessarily what it still suggests is that in a way the universe is a co-creation of us and we are a co-creation of the universe. And in that sense, the more that you investigate something, the more you look into it, the more you're going to find and keep on finding. It's a bit like one of those Mandela, and I'm not going to quote that right, Mandela patterns, where the more you look into it, the more it's repeated infinitely.
Yeah, and do you know, it's impossible once you get into quantum physics, impossible to not bump up against theology. Now, I'm not a religious mm-hmm. person, but did you know there is a theological version of quantum entanglement? Have you heard it?
I haven't heard it. Certainly what I guess it's probably a direction that I'm coming in from the way that I look at things, because the quantum entanglement theory would suggest that the whole universe is a quantum thought process of which we're part of.
Mm-hmm.
And that would suggest that there's this kind of quantum god, if you like, which we are therefore part of, if you like. You can kind of look at all the ancient texts and see, like I said, right at the beginning of the show, you can see kind of evidence of this thought process that God, as we see it, our kind of Western version of God, is based on a far ancient design, which was essentially this kind of big energy mass, if you like, which almost thought itself into existence by thought. And the thought process is part of that quantum energy, part of that energy. And like I say, certainly in the ancient Indian texts, they talk very much on similar levels in terms of their kind of thoughts about particles and how those kind of relate to energy and matter and things. And yeah, I can see theology coming out of that.
Well, let me give you two theological statements that I've run across in books. I honestly cannot tell you who said these, but I have run across these in books that I've read. One is, it is impossible to think beyond that which exists. Now, that was used as a proof that God exists. If I can think about it, it exists. Now, that's quantum entanglement.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
The other one went like this, and I don't know why I haven't thought about these in years, but our conversation here tonight made me think about them. But here's the second one. You know the famous statement, "I think, therefore I am."
Yep.
There's another version of that, a modification of it. I exist because God thinks so.
Yes, I've come across that one.
Yeah. Do you remember who said that? I can't remember.
At all. I can't grab it out of my head. And it almost sounds like a quote from a guy called Douglas Adams, who was a sci-fi writer. But the whole perception is, and I guess this comes back right down to this.
Hate to do it. We're into a break. It's taking over, and our microphones are about to go dead. We'll be right back.
It's not bizarre that this seems cliche. Scar, they won't go away. They're all saying
porcelain. Dark secrets lie within a place I've never been. It's always a shame when there's no one to blame. I can't even spell her name or remember her birthday. Well, that's a pity. She's very pretty. She ain't so witty.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
I'll be there in the morning light.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and my guest is Steve Mitchell. Well, my guest was Steve Mitchell. I don't know what happened. Okay, I'll tell you what we will do. We will reestablish contact with Steve. But that's, you know, live radio. What do you expect, huh? It's bound to happen. All right, let's see if we can get him back on the telephone with us here. All right. And the telephone is ringing. We'll see if he answers. Were you abducted, Steve?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay, were you abducted?
Ring me right back. Yeah, absolutely, dragged off by the aliens. I thought you said you'd ring me right back. It was only when I put the phone down when I realized what you'd actually said. We've
okay.
been ringing each other, haven't we? You know.
Yeah, I said, we'll be right back. Okay, we are back.
Yeah, I realized that after I put the phone down.
Well, we're here.
5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, yeah. It's early over there. You need another cup of tea,
yeah,
you know.
Okay,
you said that statement sounded a lot like, and we had to go to break, so I had to cut you off. The statement, I exist because God thinks so. Now, I'll take that another step in a moment, but who did you say that sounds like?
I actually said Douglas Adams. He's a comedy sci-fi writer, quite famous over here. But it's the sort of thing that he'd come up with because he's quite a philosophical guy. I say he is. He died a few years back now, unfortunately. But the guy who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It may be. I was thinking that I read it in somebody's theological book. I read all kinds of books. Let me take it a step further.
Yep.
Everyone on the planet has their own definition when they say the word God. And for them, that definition is real,
and that's that's it. Okay. Mm-hmm. But obviously, not any of us would think that we have all knowledge, and not any of us would think that we're 100% correct. And I think all of us would have to say that whether you believe there is a real personal God, or if you believe that what we call God is the organizing consciousness of the universe, or however you define it, at some point, if quantum physics is right and quantum entanglement is correct, we are the product of that consciousness.
Yeah, are we? Or is it a product of our consciousness? This comes back to the whole circle and the dot. This comes back to this whole starting point, chicken and egg kind of thing.
Well, then, I would have to say that because of time, it would have to be that we are the product, because we did not exist at the beginning of time, which we can document goes back beyond us.
Is time linear?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, but there was a time when we were not.
Yeah, I mean, the other argument at the other end of the scale is, and it's the psychological kind of thought process, the philosophical thought process. It comes down to if a tree falls in a wood and we're not there, does it make a sound kind of thing? Before we were born, did anything exist? After we died, does anything exist? Is our reality it? Are we the center of our reality? For me, it kind of goes around in circles, and it kind of comes back to almost one and the other can be exactly true at exactly the same time. We become both a product of the universe, a product of God, and God by its nature, if you like, an extension outwards, becomes a product of ourselves.
Well, I will say this. If God is a product of ourselves, we have made some really bad product here lately. There are some definitions of God that are fierce and angry and murderous. And those definitions of God, I hope that it's not us that actually brings that into being. I hope that's just human fallacy and imagination.
Yeah, it comes down to what is reality, doesn't it? How do we express reality? What is real for each of us? You said a few minutes ago, you know, each of us has our version of God, if you like. Even as an atheist, we have our version of not God, which is still saying there's a God in a really weird, perverse, kind of back-to-front way. It works out. Is that because it's true for that person? Does that mean it's really true? Does that mean that that is what reality is? Or does that mean that that person is effectively wrong? And, you know, it comes down to, do we honor ourselves? Do we honor our own reality? Do we honor each other's reality? Do we come to a kind of co-creative process?
Well, I think we can manipulate reality around us. We manipulate our perceptions of it. But, you know, there's a simple test to see if we create reality or if reality mm-hmm. exists objectively. And that is
right.
meditate, be hypnotized and convinced absolutely that you can breathe underwater. Then try it. It won't work.
It will work.
You can breathe underwater?
Right. We started out life breathing underwater, didn't we?
Well, are you saying that a person could absolutely change themselves to where they could breathe underwater?
We spent 9 months breathing underwater.
Well, we don't breathe.
Well, I don't know. It's
I would be willing to do a live broadcast from that experiment.
I'm not going to do it.
I don't think we create reality, but we do create our experience of it. Yeah. I think we create our experience of reality.
Yeah, I think it's a co-creative process. I think we stick to certain rules because that's kind of what works, and that we kind of work within those rules, and that there's a lot more outside of that that is possible. Whether it is possible to bend the rules enough to say we can breathe underwater, or we can walk through doors, or we can make all these happen, I don't know. But then again, you know, the property of water, the property of the physics works on a specific dimensional level anyway. So within that dimension of experience, we can't.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I mean when I say that I don't think we create our own reality, but we do create our perception of it and thereby create our experience with it. And I think that we limit ourselves within the parameters that we have to deal with. We limit ourselves even more. And we don't have to. And I think that there is a great deal more to what we are than what we have been told, and a great deal more than what most of us have experienced.
Absolutely. The easiest example of that is merely to look at the spectrum of light we see, and it's something I mentioned in my DVD as an example. We see from red through to violet, and that's it. But that isn't the spectrum of light. That's such a small part. And other animals clearly work in different spectrums, so they kind of see a different reality, if you like, to us, because they see the ultraviolet. Bees, for example, see ultraviolet on petals, forming a kind of target area to lead them into the center of the flowers. So, yes, we certainly limit the way that we choose, if you like, to take on board those senses.
All right, Steve, man, I wish we had more time, but we don't. We're out of time. It has been absolutely fascinating. If you will, stay on the line with me. Don't hang up. I'll be with you as soon as I close the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Mitchell, you want to go over to his website, dragonsandrings.com, and you want also to get your hands on that DVD, that CD that he's created. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back tomorrow night with our guest tomorrow night, Dick Criswell. You be here too, okay? Until then, so long, everybody.